My name is Lakaitan from Kwantlen First Nation. The speech you are about to hear belongs to Chief Seattle. How can you buy the sky? How can you own the rain and the wind? My mother told me, every part of this earth is sacred to our people. Every pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every meadow and humming insect are all holy and the memory of our people. My father said to me, I know the sap that courses through the trees, as I know the blood that flows in my veins. We are part of the earth, and it is part of us. The perfumed flowers are our sisters. The bear, the deer, the great eagle, these are our brothers. The rocky crests, the meadows, the ponies, all belong to the same family. The voice of my ancestors said to me, the shining water that moves in the streams and rivers is not simply water, but the blood of your grandfather's grandfather. Each ghostly reflection in the clear waters of the lakes tells us memories and the life of our people. The waters murmur and the voice of your great-great-grandmother. The rivers are our brothers. They quench our thirst. They carry our canoes and feed our children. You must give to the rivers the kindness you would give to any brother. The voice of my grandfather said to me, the air is precious. It shares its spirits with all the life it supports. The wind that gave me my first breath also received my last sigh. You must keep the land and the air apart and sacred as the place where one can go to taste the wind that is sweetened by the meadow flowers. When the last red man and woman have vanished with their wilderness, and their memory is only a shadow of a cloud moving across the prairie, will the shores and the forest be still here? Will there be any spirit of my people left? My ancestors said to me, this we know. The earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth. The voice of my grandmother said to me, teach your children what you have been taught. The earth is our mother. What befalls the earth, all the sons and daughters of the earth What befalls the earth befalls all the sons and daughters of the earth. Hear my voice and the voice of my ancestors. The destiny of your people is a mystery to us. What will happen to the buffalo when they are all slaughtered, the wild horses tamed? What will happen when the secret corners of the forest are heavy with the scent of many men? When the view of the ripe hills is blotted by talking wires? Where will the thicket be? Gone? Where will the eagle be? Gone. And what will happen when we say goodbye to the swift pony and the hunt? It will be the end of the living and the beginning of survival. This we know. All things are connected like the blood that unites us. We did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. We love this earth as a newborn loves his mother's heartbeat. If we sell you our land, care for it as we have cared for it. Hold in your mind the memory of the land as it is when you receive it. Preserve the land in the air and the rivers of your children's children, and love it as we have loved it.
Oh, 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 oh,
The significant problems we face in life cannot be solved at the same level of thinking we were at when we created them. Albert Einstein.
substance found by a Southwest Arkansas man be part of a government test? Well, that's the question at the heart of a phenomenon called chemtrails, now getting widespread attention.
Well, they say the government is dumping chemicals on us to control or manipulate the weather.
And they say the unusual looking jet trails in the sky are actually chemical laden chemtrails.
People say the government is up there in airplanes spraying all kinds of chemicals to change or manipulate the weather, leaving what you see there, and they call that a chemtrail.
So what I look at there and I think are contrails, you're telling me are chemtrails.
Yes, that a contrail would be dissipated by now.
And it's interesting, Gail and Christina, this is of interest not just in this country, but European countries and frankly all over the world. A lot of folks interested in it.
Well, Dave, you mentioned that climatologists and others who study the atmosphere believe that they'd be able to surely spot any kind of signs of an ominous plot.
You cannot get an intelligent organism such as a human being out of an unintelligent universe. The saying in the New Testament that figs do not grow on thistles nor grapes on thorns applies equally to the world. You do not find an intelligent organism living in an unintelligent environment. Look, here is a tree in the garden, and every summer it produces apples, and we call it an apple tree because the tree apples. That's what it does. All right, now here is a solar system inside a galaxy, and one of the peculiarities of this solar system is that at least on the planet Earth, the thing peoples. In just the same way that an apple tree apples. Now maybe 2 million years ago, somebody came from another galaxy in a flying saucer and had a look at this solar system. And they looked it over and shrugged their shoulders and said, just a bunch of rocks. And they went away. Later on, maybe 2 million years later, they came around and they looked at it again. And they said, excuse me, we thought it was a bunch of rocks, but it's peopling. And it's alive. After all, it has done something intelligent. Because you see, we grow out of this world in exactly the same way that the apples grow on the apple tree. If evolution means anything, it means that.
How about getting off of these antibiotics? How about stopping
them transparent dangling carrots? How about that ever elusive cooler? How would you like your water filtered?
Like this?
Or like this?
Well, I started to save seeds 20 years ago when I first realized that corporations wanted to own and control seed. They wanted to create property in seed. They wanted to turn it into their intellectual property. And they wanted to genetically engineer seed to maximize their profits and returns by marrying seeds to chemicals like herbicide-resistant crops, BT toxin crops. For me, the imperative to save seeds came really from an ethical urge to defend life's evolution, life's diversity, and the freedom of life to reproduce, to multiply, to be able to just be distributed. Because I could see that this would create a new kind of scarcity, which it has. Today, 150,000 farmers in India have committed suicide in areas where seed has been destroyed, where they have to buy the seed from Monsanto and buy it every year at very, very high cost. And that high cost seed is getting them into debt, and that debt is pushing them to suicide. What we've done is create community seed banks, places where we collect and save seeds, rescue them from disappearance, multiply them, and then distribute them according to farmers' needs. And about 40 community seed banks have been created across the length and breadth of India, places where these have been created. Farmers are not in distress, because the biggest cost today is seeds and chemicals. These seed banks have now been a new place where we can respond to the new crisis of globalization on the one hand and climate change on the other. Globalization has led to farmer suicides. We are able to take seeds to these suicide zones and distribute the seeds so that farmers can break out of that dependency, grow food crops, get out of debt. We've been able to create community seed banks to deal with climate change, with the extreme flooding, the new droughts, the cyclones, the hurricanes that lead to salinization. And today for us, the work on seed has become the place from where we are responding to the worst tragedies and the worst crises of our times.
Attracting me, attracting me, attracting you. poison love, forbidden fruit. Don't think twice, it's evil root. Poison love, attracting you, attracting me, attracting you.
Your time will come. You will face the same evil, and you will defeat it.
Hello, I'm Severin Suzuki speaking for ECHO, the Environmental Children's Organization. We are a group of 12 and 13-year-olds trying to make a difference. Vanessa Setti, Morgan Geisler, Michelle Quigg, and me. We've raised all the money to come here ourselves, to come 5,000 miles to tell you adults you must change your ways. Coming up here today, I have no hidden agenda. I am fighting for my future. Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. I am here to speak for all generations to come. I am here to speak on behalf of the starving children around the world whose cries go unheard. I am here to speak for the countless animals dying across this planet because they have nowhere left to go. I am afraid to go out in the sun now because of the holes in our ozone. I am afraid to breathe the air because I don't know what chemicals are in it. I used to go fishing in Vancouver, my home, with my dad, until just a few years ago we found the fish full of cancers. And now we hear of animals and plants going extinct, every day vanishing forever. In my life, I have dreamt of seeing the great herds of wild animals, jungles and rainforests full of birds and butterflies, but now I wonder if they will even exist for my children to see. Did you have to worry of these things when you were my age? All this is happening before our eyes, and yet we act as if we have all the time we want and all the solutions. I'm only a child, and I don't have all the solutions. But I want you to realize, neither do you. You don't know how to fix the holes in our ozone layer. You don't know how to bring the salmon back up in a dead stream. You don't know how to bring back an animal now extinct. And you can't bring back the forest that once grew where there is now a desert. If you don't know how to fix it, please stop breaking it. Here, you may be delegates of your government, business people, organizers, reporters, or politicians, but really, your mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, aunts and uncles, and all of you are someone's child. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all part of a family, 5 billion strong, in fact, 30 million species strong, and borders and governments will never change that. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all in this together, and should act as one single world towards one single goal. In my anger, I am not blind, and in my fear, I am not afraid of telling the world how I feel. In my country, we make so much waste. We buy and throw away, buy and throw away, buy and throw away, and yet northern countries will not share with the needy. Even when we have more than enough, we are afraid to share. We are afraid to let go of some of our wealth. In Canada, we live the privileged life with plenty of food, water, and shelter. We have watches, bicycles, computers, and television sets. The list could go on for 2 days. 2 days ago, here in Brazil, You were shocked when we spent time with some children living on the streets. This is what one child told us. I wish I was rich. And if I were, I would give all the street children food, clothes, medicines, shelter, and love and affection. If a child on the streets who has nothing is willing to share, why are we who have everything still so greedy? I can't stop thinking that these are children my own age, that it makes a tremendous difference where you are born, that I could be one of those children living in the favelas of Rio. I could be a child starving in Somalia, or a victim of war in the Middle East, or a beggar in India. I am only a child, yet I know if all the money spent on war was spent on finding environmental answers, ending poverty, and finding treaties, what a wonderful place this earth would be. At school, even in kindergarten, you teach us how to behave in the world. You teach us to not to fight with others, to work things out, to respect others, to clean up our mess, not to hurt other creatures, to share, not be greedy. Then why do you go out and do the things you tell us not to do? Do not forget why you are attending these conferences, who you're doing this for. We are your own children. You are deciding what kind of a world we are growing up in. Parents should be able to comfort their children by saying, everything's going to be all right. It's not the end of the world. And we're doing the best we can. But I don't think you can say that to us anymore. Are we even on your list of priorities? My dad always says, you are what you do, not what you say. Well, what you do makes me cry at night. You grown-ups say you love us, but I challenge you, please, make your actions reflect your words. Thank you.
have not inherited Earth from you. You are borrowing her from us. Please, give me the opportunity to leave a beautiful Earth for my children. Please, for your children.
Hello and good day. I'm Joanne and this is Rocket Boom. The rise of dead zones has been all over the news lately. Rutger Rosenberg of the University of Gothenburg in Sweden reported in a recent edition of the journal Science that there are more than 400 dead zones around the world, double what the United Nations reported just 2 years ago. According to marine biologists, coastal dead zones now comprise around 245,000 square kilometers across the world.
Save our planet. Continued Arctic methane release raises threat of runaway global warming. Researchers studying the climate in the Arctic regions of Siberia, Canada, and Alaska, USA, have confirmed that the rate at which methane is now being released into the atmosphere for the melting tundra's region's permafrost could soon exceed dangerous tipping points, beyond which humans' ability to mitigate climate change may become futile.
To let me know you're here. All of these lines are being crossed over the atmosphere.
Call it.
Japan says it suspended its annual whale hunt in the Antarctic after being hounded at sea by anti-whaling protesters. There's been irritation in Japan at regular attempts by the US-based group the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society to stop whale hunts. Recently, activists have taken to chasing the Japanese fleet's mother ship. The government says it's stopping the hunt for safety reasons and may bring all its ships home. We find the Sea Shepherd's harassment extremely regrettable and are asking all countries involved to take any action necessary against them. Commercial whaling was banned 25 years ago, but Japan says it follows a rule allowing hunting for scientific research. Much of the whale meat, however, is eaten. Australia is taking Japan to the World Court to try to stop whaling in the Antarctic Ocean.
The battle for Helm's Deep is over. The battle for Middle-earth is about to begin.
Earth, 114 million years ago, one morning just after sunrise. The first flower ever to appear on the planet opens up to receive the rays of the sun. Prior to this momentous event that heralds an evolutionary transformation in the life of plants, the planet had already been covered in vegetation for millions of years. The first flower probably did not survive for long, and flowers must have remained rare and isolated phenomena, since conditions were most likely not yet favorable for widespread flowering to occur. One day, however, a critical threshold was reached, and suddenly, there would have been an explosion of color and scent all over the planet, if a perceiving consciousness had been there to witness it. Much later, those delicate and fragrant beings we call flowers would come to play an essential part in the evolution of consciousness of another species. Humans would increasingly be drawn to and fascinated by them. As the consciousness of human beings developed, flowers were most likely the first thing they came to value which had no utilitarian purpose for them, that is to say, was not linked in some way to survival. They provided inspiration to countless artists, poets, and mystics. Jesus tells us to contemplate the flowers and learn from them how to live. The Buddha is said to have given a silent sermon once, during which he held up a flower and gazed at it. After a while, one of those present, a monk called Mahakasyapa, began to smile. He is said to have been the only one who had understood the sermon. According to legend, that smile, that is to say, realization, was handed down by 28 successive masters and much later became the origin of Zen. Seeing beauty in a flower could awaken humans, however briefly, to the beauty that is an essential part of their own innermost being, their true nature. The first recognition of beauty was one of the most significant events in the evolution of human consciousness. The feelings of joy and love are intrinsically connected to that recognition. Without fully realizing it, flowers would become for us an expression in form of that which is most high, most sacred, and ultimately formless within ourselves. Flowers, more fleeting, more ethereal, and more delicate than the plants out of which they emerged, would become like messengers from another realm, like a bridge between the world of physical forms and the formless. They not only had a scent that was delicate and pleasing to humans, but also brought a fragrance from the realm of spirit. Using the word enlightenment in a wider sense than the conventionally accepted one, we could look upon flowers as the enlightenment of plants. Any life form in any realm, mineral, vegetable, animal, or human, can be said to undergo enlightenment. It is, however, an extremely rare occurrence, since it is more than an evolutionary progression. It also implies a discontinuity in its development, a leap to an entirely different level of being and, most important, a lessening of materiality. What could be heavier and more impenetrable than a rock the densest of all forms. And yet, some rocks undergo a change in their molecular structure, turn into crystals, and so become transparent to the light. Some carbons, under inconceivable heat and pressure, turn into diamonds, and some heavy minerals into other precious stones. Most crawling reptilians, the most earthbound of all creatures, have remained unchanged for millions of years. Some, however, grew feathers and wings and turned into birds, thus defying the force of gravity that had held them for so long. They didn't become better at crawling or walking, but transcended crawling and walking entirely. Since time immemorial, flowers, crystals, precious stones, and birds have held special significance for the human spirit. Like all life forms, they are, of course, temporary manifestations of the underlying one life, one consciousness. Their special significance and the reason why humans feel such fascination for and affinity with them can be attributed to their ethereal quality. Once there is a certain degree of presence, of still and alert attention in human beings' perceptions, they can sense the divine life essence, the one indwelling consciousness or spirit in every creature, every life form, recognize it as one with their own essence, and so love it as themselves. Until this happens, however, most humans see only the outer forms, unaware of the inner essence, just as they are unaware of their own essence and identify only with their own physical and psychological form.
The honor of one is the honor of all. And whatever we do touches each and everything in the universe. Each of us was put here in this time and this place to personally decide the future of the world. Did you think you were put here for something less? So if you do it this way, that is, if you truly join your heart and mind as one, whatever you ask for, that's the way it's going to be.
Friendship Cry of the Great Spirit by the Circle of Existence.